Well, good evening and good morning, EPL State of Mind listeners. Oh boy, does it sound and feel good to say that again. Not for our first time, not for our second time, but for our, can you imagine it guys, our 63rd time. This is our 63rd episode. We had 44 last season, and I'm just excited to get season three kicked back off with you guys. It's been a while. It has been quite the summer. Even though the EPL has been off season, I feel like we've probably gotten the most summer soccer that we've ever received in our entire lives with the Olympics, the Copa America, the Euros, which all three of us, other than the Olympics, we've had a little bit of our own history and passion, participation in it. Sean, obviously, you had a couple of games on your belt with Copa America. I was in Frankfurt for a couple of days watching Portugal. I mean, it was quite the summer on and off the pitch. I'm so happy to be back here with you guys and having another season on the cast to talk to us and to you guys, our listeners. So welcome back to everybody. Sean, you probably had the least amount of activities going on in this off season, probably just sitting on your couch for, you know, endless hours, endless days. How was your summer, my man?
Yeah, very low key. I got married, my wife's pregnant, and we're trying to buy a house. But other than that, I really haven't been up to too much. Pretty low on the lifetime milestones this week.
Yeah, 2024, 2025 season for Sean will go down in the record books as one of his highest performing seasons on and off the pitch. Obviously, he's got a
clinical finishing.
Kyle, how is your summer, my man? You don't have a child. You are living with your parents, and you do have a girlfriend, and she's been by a few times, which is great. Still have to meet her.
Yeah. No, big things. Big things. Got a haircut 2 weeks ago. That was fire. big moves. We're looking for places to live. Probably Boston, Copenhagen, one of the two. Very different regions, but
they're very synonymous. Europe. Synonymous with them, or synonymous? What the fucking cool word was it going for?
Synonymous.
Thank you. Synonymous. Denmark and Boston.
He's back, baby. He's back.
But come in the same way I go out.
I mean, what a lucky summer to just be doing your own thing. You know, we had entertaining soccer throughout, whether it's the Copa, watching Colombia blow it in Astoria with my brother in a very Colombian neighborhood, and hearing the sirens die in the middle of the street at the exact moment the goal was scored was hilarious. But other than that, it was just an entertaining summer. Lots to unpack. I mean, Olympic drama, Copa drama, Euro drama, Ronaldo just being the GOAT, all the good stuff. So, James, how was your summer?
I mean, it was really great. It's still going on, obviously. A lot of fun activities. Like I said before, I was in Frankfurt. I think seeing Ronaldo, Bernardo Silva, you know, Diaz, I mean, just an unbelievable squad that was with Ronaldo, you know, in Portugal, watching them play against Slovenia in probably the most entertaining sporting event I've ever been in was absolutely bonkers. That's definitely one of the highlights of the summer. I got to watch the penalty kick shootout at the top of a massive hill in Portugal. Unfortunately, Portugal lost that night. Thankfully for my liver, they lost, but unfortunately for the atmosphere and the party in Porto, they did lose. But it's been a great summer. Moved in with Julia. Actually just this past month. So we all have a little milestones going on, but it's a very, very moving and grooving summer for us all. And I'm happy to share it with all of our listeners and continuing the EPL State of Mind as one of the staples. But hey guys, what can you do? It's soccer time, baby. We start our season officially next week. The championship started this weekend, I believe, correct? So we do have some soccer on the prowess coming up, and we did have a big game this weekend. We had the Community Shield. Obviously,
massive game.
Obviously, the participant Man City was participating in it last year. They actually took the Community Shield this year against Man U. It was a pretty entertaining game. The lineups were obviously nothing to what would be starting for next week's teams or squads. Want to just point out, obviously, that we had Harry Maguire and Johnny Evans as center backs for Manchester United. The injury woes have started for Man U before the season has even commenced, which is absolutely bonkers. So we'll see how that goes. But a good win for Manchester City. Late goal drama with Bernardo Silva, of course, headering the ball in the 88th minute. Poor defending from Manchester United on that. And ended up winning in penalty kick shootouts. The only thing that came positive of that for me is the fact that the winner of the Community Shield, I think for the past three seasons, has not gone on to win the league. So this could be a nice little stat that Manchester United won't win.
We'll see about that. I mean, if you guys have been listening to the pod for many years, you know that I'm a huge fan of those subtle trophies like the Community Shield, the Europa League. It's those little ones that get you the silverware in the cabinet that mean the most. And it's just a masterclass of coaching by not sending out the all-star lineup. You know, you got to save the beef for the main course. And now we're just starting with appetizers. If that's what Man U is throwing out, then we just got to put up an appetizer that's a little bit better. And that's exactly what we did. Great win, great coaching, great playing. Just another trophy. You loved it.
Just a full disclosure, before we went on air, Kyle did mention that he had no idea the Community Shield was on yesterday. So I think we all know where the season is going for Manchester City. It's down the tubes, down the tubes. That's it.
I mean, all right. It was a nice update to get on the phone.
A pleasant surprise. But no surprise to you guys. The first episode of the season, or at least the first part of the first episode of the season, we do our preview for the season. We did a wrap up last year. We briefly talked about a few things that we want to see improve in teams. But for this cause and this purpose of the episode, we're going to go through the teams team by team, do a quick little highlight of where they sat last season and some of the key statistics. And of course, this transfer window, as we mentioned before, wasn't as exhilarating at the start, but obviously is heating up quite a bit with only, I believe, 19 days remaining, something around that, and ends the first, I believe, is September. So at the end of August, we will have that window shut. But as always, we go in complete random and alphabetical order of teams one at a time. And we don't do AFC Bournemouth, we do Bournemouth. So the first team is, of course, Arsenal. Hopefully going to stay at this first location for the remainder of the season. But Arsenal obviously finished in second place last year. We are entering Mikel Arteta's sixth season. I believe it's his fifth full season. He came in halfway through his first. But obviously with significant amount of playing time under his belt, the expectations for the season are at its absolute highest for Mikel. Still hasn't had a contract extension quite yet. For the next couple of years, but I'm hopefully anticipating that after a good start to this season. Another thing that, you know, we are looking at is we're no longer the young bloods. Our average age is 25.5 years old, so I can no longer wear that hat as I so like to do throughout the season. But with that comes a lot of experience, and the team is really shining so far. Only one loss in the preseason so far against Liverpool, which was an entertaining game where we saw a lot of young players on both sides of the pitch take field. We go back last season, their goal scored was the highest that they've had ever for the squad. It was 91. We only conceded 29 goals with a goal differential of 62, which obviously was first in the league. Defensively, we were stacked. We only increased that this offseason, but obviously we're looking to do a lot of additional open play goals. The biggest thing for Arsenal was we were the leading goal scorers for set pieces, but the open play and from outside of the box goal scores were very low. Open play, we scored very little. We had six outside of the box goals, which was the 13th, was tied for 13th most, which isn't great. You had teams like Man City, Liverpool, and surprisingly Burnley actually up top for this. And I think it's an area of improvement we need to go. I think as far as transfer activities go, we wanted to see a lot. The Kroenkes came out and said we had about a $200 million budget for the season. Obviously, I think some of that is being saved for the summer window. But as everyone knows, we brought in David Raya. He was only on loan, a $3 million loan fee last year from the Bees, but kept him. A huge one that myself and Luigi are very excited about is bringing on an Italian onto the squad. And this is a left mid, left side center back of Riccardo Calafiori, 22 years of age, had a killer Euro and a great season with Bologna last year. So really exciting season, a really exciting signing for the squad. It's our highest one with 45 million. And then finally, hopefully the only one that's really on the record books right now is Mikel Merino from Real Sociedad. Just played with Udegaard before, real great experience, center midfield player, hopefully there to help, share the load with Udegaard, Rice, Jorginho and Partey. So it'd be great to see him come in. We're looking at a, potentially $19 to $17 million fee on him. Outgoing transfers, however, I'm going to have a quick moment of silence. I think our largest ever club signing or sell was with Emile Smith Rowe. Pour one out for the homie. I will miss him dearly, but we will still see him, which I'm excited to see him, his development and his growth in Fulham. Still young, came in around the same time as Saka. Unfortunately, had a very injury-stricken career with Arsenal's first team, but he'll always go down as one of my favorite players. Jakob Kivior is rumored to be on the move as well. I think with Ricardo Calafiori coming in, I think it's a great idea to get him out. Reece Nelson, Eddie Nketiah are also rumored to leave. Eddie Nketiah sounds like he's actually going to be on the move with a loan to Marseille with an obligation to buy around 30 million. He'll rejoin a familiar coach in the English Premier League with Robert Zerbi, I think, or Roberto rather. And I think he will, you know, he saw what Eddie was able to do. And I think that's why he was going pretty heavily for Eddie. A lot of skills with Eddie. He's a very physical player. He will be missed, but I think we have the attacking prowess that we need. And if we are going to, you know, do another signing, I think it could be for a striker, which Eddie would just go to fourth in the playlist at that point. And it just is on our wage bills at that length. And he's an academy player, so we can get it. Other than that, I think we probably have seen the end of the summer transfer window for Arsenal. And I think we can kind of move on. But Kyle, Sean, what are your expectations for Arsenal? Obviously, our domestic objective is to win the league and another deep run in the Champions League. We got a couple tough games early on in the fixture with Tottenham away week 4 and Man City away week 5. Our first game is this weekend against the Wolves.
Yeah, I think one of the keys to your guys' success this season is going to be probably from March on. It's the second season in a row where we're seeing stats of Arsenal led the league for X amount of weeks, and they are just doing historic stuff over there. But it comes down to the last 10 weeks of those other top teams don't stop. And, you know, those ties, whether or not you're losing games, but those ties add up. That's 2 points dropped. And you have to be able to get, realistically, 24, 27 points out of those last 10 games if you want to win the Premier League. So I think that's a key to your guys' success is you always start the season so well, a phenomenal fall. You do well throughout the winter. And it's not like you fall off toward the end. It's just there are other teams that do better at the end of the season, and that's why you're losing the chip at the end of the season, in my opinion. So I think you clear that up, that you have a phenomenal chance. Great coach, young team. You guys click. Your chemistry is probably 115 as far as FIFA is concerned. So it should be fire.
Yeah, we held first place for 11 weeks, which I think was tied for the most with Liverpool, actually. Other than that, it'll be another exciting summer, or exciting season for Arsenal. Sean, anything to add? Or you want us to kick it off with Villa?
Yeah, I think we can jump right into Aston Villa. I think, like you said, Arsenal's goal this year has to be to win the league. Remains to be seen. I think that they need one more body in attack to kind of give them insurance for a Saka injury or just someone that's a little bit more of consistent finisher up front than Havertz, even though he had a pretty strong season last year.
Yeah, we have the smallest squad with 24 right now, actually. So it's a good point to say.
And then so moving across, you know, Arsenal obviously will be in the Champions League. Another team that will be in the Champions League next year for the first time in the Premier League era is Aston Villa. This is Unai Emery's third year, his second full season. Obviously, like we mentioned, they finished top four last year. And the guy who led the way on that front was Ollie Watkins, 19 goals, 13 assists, which was the top in the Premier League. And then obviously, he was their top overall creator in terms of goal contributions. Something that I wanted to point out, just interesting going through the numbers, they scored 76 goals last year, but they only created an XG of 63.3. To me, that indicates that they probably overachieved last season. Another thing to point out as well is the fact that Emi Martinez had the best post-shot XG plus or minus in the league, basically a high figure. It was a 4.9. A high figure or above zero indicates that you either had really good luck or you have a tremendous shot stopper. They probably had a little bit of both. I think Martinez is probably their most important player. They play such a high defensive line, and they rely on him to either sweep up. He had the second highest defensive actions of any goalkeeper in the league behind Vicario. And then obviously he's also a tremendous shot stopper. And to top it all off, he's a shithouse and a half.
He will never fail with that. He won't. I mean, he had a great Copa America as well, obviously winning that with Argentina. He's a great goalie. Unfortunately, ever since he left Arsenal, I think he's always been a good goalie. But, you know, Aston Villa did lose a lot of players in the offseason that will help that. I think you put it really well. They had the XGs, which was a bit of luck. So I see a little recession there. And losing some key players will also not add to that. They did gain some. Do you want to go through their key incoming transfers and then who they lost here, who I think is a huge loss.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll start it off with Amadou Onana, who moved over from Everton for $60 million. He's probably the best example of the classic destroyer in the Premier League, someone who can play in that holding midfield role and uses his physicality and his athleticism to break up play and start attacks for his team going the other way. You have a note here from our friend Blake, who said that Onana was their most overrated player, but we'll see how he does in a proper team. It's funny he says that too, because we had Blake on, I think, in November. And then I went to Liverpool a month later, and something Onana did in that 3 or 4 week time span, he soured every Everton fan on him because they all hated him after this. They got knocked out in the Carabao Cup by Fulham. And after that, they were all like, this guy's dead to me. So it'll be interesting to see if he can kind of go in and make himself loved in Birmingham. But the other two signings I just wanted to talk about quickly were Jadon Philogene and Cameron Archer, who are actually former Aston Villa boys. Philogene went to Hull City last year on basically Villa had a buyback option, and he balled out. He was one of the most exciting players in the championship for a good Hull City side that just missed out on the playoffs. He had 12 goals and 6 assists. And then Cameron Archer might be a name you're familiar with. He scored a few goals for Sheffield United last year. He plays up front as a striker. Really well-rounded player. I think he could come in and spell Watkins. Obviously, they have to contend with Champions League football now, which includes an extra 2 games. There's 8 instead of 6. I think he's going to be, you know, a pretty solid piece for them. But I'll throw it over to you and talk about some of the outgoings, and especially one that I know you're probably not too happy about.
Yeah, I mean, real quick with the incoming name that we mentioned a few times with Ross Barkley last year on Luton Town. Yep. So keep an eye on for that. He's an older head, but experienced nonetheless, which should help with the rotation. And as you mentioned, the extra games in the Champions League. Outgoing transfers wise, I think Moussa Diaby, who was just in for the one season, who played phenomenally outside on the wing, super speed, him and Bailey kind of trading blows back and forth. I think that's a massive loss. But again, for a transfer fee of $60 million over to Saudi Arabia is a great win for Aston Villa. I think it's a loss in terms of skill and ability, but I don't think it's as large as a loss as Douglas Luiz, their center midfielder, their horse. Other than John McGinn, he was really the guy who kind of put the transition from defensive play to forward pressure and was able to provide Ollie Watkins a lot of services that is kind of going to go away now. He's gone to Juventus in some type of crazy player plus cash swap deal that they had. I don't know all the details on that one. I believe Weston McKennie was supposed to be part of that, but I don't see him as one of the players who came in, so I don't know if that fell through. But I think Douglas Luiz is a massive drop.
Yeah, it's Samuel Illing Jr. and Enzo Barranchea both came over from Juve and part of that deal. There was definitely some financial manipulation on Villa's end. You also can look at the Lewis Dobbin signing from Everton, as well as signing Ian Mattson for $44.5 million from Chelsea. He was on loan at Dortmund last season, got to the Champions League final. Good young player, but I don't think he's worth that much. I think there was definitely some financial manipulation. And you also look on their outgoing side as well. Tim Orogbunam, who's headed back the other way towards Everton. He was $11 million, and he's a good player, has some experience in the championship, but he hasn't shown or established himself as a first team player at that level. So for him to command an £11 million fee, basically they were trying to find a way to make the FFP work, or PSR, yeah. I guess is a better word
for now. Yeah, them, Chelsea and Everton had a lot of early action. They were one of the earlier teams to do any transfers in this window. So you could tell that Villa wants to stay exactly where they are. And I think they will. I think they'll stay top five. I think it's going to be tough. I know we have their domestic league objective is top six, qualify for Europe again, and make it out of the group stage for the Champions League. So it will be interesting. Our first home is, you know, early season fixtures for Villa is Arsenal at home. So that will be a really tough one. They beat us twice last season. They're the only team to do the double over us. So I think a couple seasons ago when Newcastle did that over us, the following season, we didn't lose to Newcastle once. We're a very vengeful team now. So hopefully we can get some points off of Villa this season. But as far as Villa goes, some good offseason traction. A team that had some off-season traction similarly in the other direction. And I think this might be a team who has their largest hit of the season so far in terms of transfers leaving their club, and that is Bournemouth, the Cherries. Other than the fact that Michael B. Jordan dropped some sick-ass jerseys for the Cherries as part of his, you know, partnership or his part owning of the of Bournemouth now. You got to check the jerseys out. They are pretty sick. And he seemed, Michael B. Jordan seems to be pretty involved with the club now, which is fun to see as well. But Bournemouth, you know, they finished in 12th position last season. Kyle's favorite team to shit on, but I think is growing a small place in his pit. They got a total of 48 points. It is Adoni Iriola's second season. We highlighted him last season when he first came on because we felt that his ability and his technical setup matched the Cherries last season. It took a little bit for it to get used to it, but they really are shining quite a bit as a middle of the table team underneath Iriola. So it's exciting to see his development there. I kind of alluded to it already, but their top goal scorer, Dominic Solanke, with 19 goals, which is tied for the fourth most. I believe fourth most was also with Phil Foden. Obviously, you had Watkins and Holland as one and two. But they really shined on the top of the pitch with Solanke, and they sold him for, I think it's like 65, I believe. You have it here, actually. Yep. Dominic Solanke went for 65 to, of course, the shitty Spurs. I think the Spurs have been waiting for someone for a long time, and Solanke fits the profile of a center striker, essentially what Harry Kane was for them. So, but staying with Bournemouth, they did try to get a couple people last season, and the one that really sticks out to us is Enes Ünal, who we've talked about having one of the weirdest and strangest names out there. But, you know, it is what it is. He's 27 years old. He is the striker. I think they're looking for him to kind of fill the shoes for the missing or the replacement of Solanke. I think, unfortunately, for Bournemouth, this will be very much like the Ivan Toney issue that the Bees had last season, with Ivan Toney being left out. They really needed some goals to come from somewhere else, and luckily for them, it came from Wissa and Mbeumo. So I think Luis Sinestra and Ünal will be the dynamic duo to bring that talent up top to kind of replace the hole that the goal-scoring Solanke was able to provide. Kyle, with the Cherries kind of doing that, are there anything else that you want to talk about within, you know, the fact that they had the highest differential indicates, you know, poor finishes for
yeah, I mean, there? Like you're mentioning, another big differential is their big chances created versus big chances missed. They had 83 big chances created and 34 of them went in the back of the net. That's a problem. It's a massive problem. You're missing almost 60% of your, a little more, almost 70% of your big chances created. You got to get rid of your strikers. Simple as that. You're bringing the chances. 83 isn't the highest mark of big chances created in the league, but it's enough that you could do something with it, 100%. So I agree with the bringing on in of Ünal, get some more goals, new striker, get rid of both the other strikers, new attitude, new team. They do have a pretty easy start to the season, in my opinion. Their first two big matches are against Newcastle and Chelsea in the first 4 weeks. Those are both teams that underperformed last year. We had them doing way better than they did. So if that's their biggest hurdle to overcome in the first month of the Premier League, I think they could do it. You know, I mean, we're talking about a team who, let's rewind back to 2022. They lost 9-0. Pathetic. April 27th. We'll never forget it. Day lives in infamy.
Is that tattooed on your ass cheek yet or what, man?
Yeah, it's right next to the City treble tattoo.
Listen, I had the City Champions League tattooed on my shoulder that year that they lost. That was a shame. But we got it back. They won. We're good. Yep. But, you know, the other thing to look at is their second half of the season was phenomenal. Phenomenal. They were one of the better teams in the Premier League. So then not only are they staying up, they're making $7-8 million in the transfer market over the season. They're net positive. I think their goal this season is no longer to stay in the Premier League. It's to finish in the top half of the table. That's a huge, huge jump considering where they were 2-3 years ago, in my opinion. Other than that, you know, they rival Southampton. It's not that much fun to watch. I mean, don't even bother tuning in. Bournemouth, Southampton, rivalry game. They gotta step that up, in my opinion. But yeah, other than that, I think it's a great, great season. Great second half of the season.
Sean, you're pretty good at predicting breakout stars. Is there someone you want to highlight here and then take it over to Brentford?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So it's a guy I talked about last year when they signed him. It was Alex Scott. He was signed from Bristol City. He was the young player of the championship in the 2022-23 season. Didn't have too many opportunities last year. I saw him a little bit in some of the domestic cups. Really skillful number 10. I think he could be a really ripe for a breakout, especially considering they kind of need a talisman going forward. I think he's a guy that could step up. He's only 20 years old now. I think he's got a really bright future. So we'll be interested to see what he does this season. But yeah, moving up the coast and into London, we have Brentford. Average age of 25 on the dot, one of the youngest teams in the league. I think they're third overall. Thomas Frank, again, we talked about him. He's one of the longest tenured coaches in the Premier League. He's entering his seventh season in charge, and he looks to push the Bees a little bit further up the table. Last year, they had a disappointing season, finishing in 16th. A negative nine goal differential, but they were actually positive in the XG battle. Just their goaltending kind of let them down, as well as their finishing. The top performers for them were Yohan Wiese, who had 12 goals, and Brian Mbeumo, who had 6 assists. And Mbeumo also chipped in with 9 goals as well. They're very much a team who's reliant on their athleticism and their physicality to drive their results forward. If you look at their overall comparison, they're very similar to how Everton plays, where they play with direct speed. They look to get forward quickly, playing long balls, and rely on their athleticism and physicality on corners and set pieces, which is definitely an area for improvement for them, because they created a ton of opportunities. They had the second highest XG on set pieces with 15.72, but they only scored 10 goals on those set plays, which was 13th in the league. And I think that definitely played a part in their downturn in results last season. They were a much more dangerous outfit in their previous 2 years in the Prem. They also have Ivan Toney returning from that betting ban. He obviously played some games last year, but he wasn't in form. He'd been out for almost a year at that point. He did score 32 goals in his previous 2 Premier League seasons. So I think he's definitely a guy that, we'd look to have a bounce back this summer, or I guess this fall as well. As far as incomings, they do have somebody who, on paper would be either complementing or replacing Ivan Toney in Igor Tiago from Club Brugge. However, unfortunately, he's got injured in a friendly last week, and he's going to be out till about December, which means that they're going to be heavily reliant on Ivan Toney and Brian Mbeumo to deliver the goods, both of whom either missed time for suspension on Tony's side, and then Mbeumo with 13 games with an ankle injury to score goals up front. Their other incoming signing is someone that just got announced today, and someone I'm familiar with. It's Fabio Carvalho from Liverpool. He was on loan at Hull City and Leipzig last year. Struggled at Leipzig, but when he moved back to his home country of England, he looked very promising for the Tigers. I think he's a really technically sound player. I just don't know where he fits in at Brentford. I think he likes to play in the number 10 role, but I don't know if they actually have that role in Thomas Frank's system. Like I said, they typically rely on their physicality and their athleticism, and that definitely is relevant to their defensive and their defensive midfield, as well as their eights, players like Norgaard and Onyeka are big physical presences. So maybe they think by adding a Carvalho, it kind of brings a little bit more balance to their midfield, and also maybe keeps better possession of the ball.
Yeah, it's possible. They're going to need a pretty solid start here at the season as well, because their early season fixtures is a highlight. You're going to have your boy revisit Anfield, Carvalho. He's going to visit Anfield again week number 2. Then Brentford has Man City in week 4. And then Spurs, week 5, all 3 fixtures are away. So a brutal start for the Bees. So getting squeaking in 1 or 2 wins out of the 5 on those ones that aren't those top 4, top 5 positions, and maybe coming away with a very dirty, downright 0-0, 1-1 kind of draw maybe against Spurs would do them a world of good.
I'd like it if they beat Man City too. Just, I'll throw that out there. I don't think they're going to, but I would really like that.
I'll second it. Yep, absolutely.
And then it
seems like a pretty targeted attack there.
We planned that before we even got on the pod. But somebody that they're planning on blossoming this summer or this season is Keen Lewis Potter. He's the youngest English winger on their squad. He also had the third highest XG plus expected assists of any Brentford player, despite only playing in half the matches. I think he's going to get a lot of opportunities this year, and I expect him to have a similar season to Anthony Gordon's breakout season, something like 7 goals and 7 assists. I think we'll be saying his name a lot more. He's a really dynamic left winger. I think he's got a chance to really break out this year.
You know, moving on to next, and Kyle, you can take this one for the run from the start, but a team that always has players breaking out, whether it's from South America, homegrown, whatever it is Brighton. They took a massive step back last season, but Kyle, do you want to kind of run us through where Brighton's sitting in your mentality wise for this upcoming
season? Sure. Yeah. I mean, I got high hopes for them. I see them clearly in the top half of the table. I don't want to say they're going to, you know, eclipse into the Champions League, anything like that, but I would be hard pressed to see them, you know, 13th, 14th in the league. I think they have the talent. They have the coach. Their fan base speaks for themselves. They are a fun team to watch. They finished last season in 11th place with a total of 48 points. I think we all had them doing better than that, especially considering the amount we talked about them in the previous season with some of their breakout stars. But, you know, you're looking at a team who has the most goals is with João Pedro, 9. Most assists, Pascal Gross, at 10. Those numbers aren't standing out on anyone's radar. Maybe the assists, anyone that double digits assists, I have respect for. Good for you. Great job. He also scored 4 goals, was their key guy for contributions at 14. But, you know, you really got to start playing your old fashion. There was a lot of tricksters on Brighton. They had a lot of selfish players, and I thought that worked for them. You know, you have people like Matoma. How many times did we reference him? He was dribbling between people's legs like it was nothing. But, you know, they had a decent transfer window. They did lose about almost $100 million because they only got rid of Pascal Gross. You know, their best player last season, in my opinion. But they did bring in 5 other players. We got a couple wingers right and left, another right winger, a couple midfielders. They didn't really help the defensive aspect, but you know what? You got to play to win. You're not going to win any games if you don't score goals. I don't care about it. You know what I mean? But yeah, and that's the other thing is they only spent £91 million on players. These guys, I can try these names for you guys. Here we go. We got Yankuba Minte, 19 years old, coming in from Newcastle. We got Mats Wifer from Feyenoord. Ibrahim Osman from, Nords Jelland.
No, I would Nords Holland, I guess, because J is kind of like
it. Nords Jelland might be right. Yeah. It's a Danish league team. He came from the Right to Dream Academy in Ghana. We've seen guys like Mohamed Kudus come through there, Ibrahim Sulemana, who played at Southampton as well. And while we stay in the Nordic, we also have Malik Yalkuye. I fell on that sword for you, Kyle. But there's actually one signing I wanted to talk about with you, James, which was Armario Kozier-Dewberry, which is also an absolute mouthful, who signed on a free transfer, but he came from a little place called Arsenal. So why don't you talk to me a little bit about him, what you know about him?
Yeah, I mean, he's a right winger. He was, you know, very early on said to possibly be the next Saka for us. He is a very bright academy grad from Haaland. But this was a tough one. We went to him with 2 offers to sign as a new professional contract with them. He eventually opted out to leave, as you can see. And I'm glad that he chose Brighton because they are very, very good at developing young talent. Obviously, with a new coach, which I'll let you talk about a little bit more. We don't have the, you know, knowledge like we did with De Zerbi, knowing how he likes to play his players, how he likes to develop them. We have a new American coach, so that's great. And you could talk about that a little bit more, but it was definitely a loss. We lost 2 big academy grads this season, and this is one of them. Obviously, Wanyiri, who's been playing on the offseason a lot for us, is a big one that we have to hold on to, so we prioritize that a little bit more. But it will be exciting to see if he's able to break into this team. He is still very, very young, but the whole squad, age-wise, is one of the youngest. Brighton also they're tied for the 2nd largest squad in the Premier League right now. Everyone thought that was probably going to be held solely by Chelsea, and it probably will by the end of the window. but right now, Brighton is up there with depth, which, you know, to Kyle's point before, they didn't have a great season last year, obviously, because they lost Moises Caicedo, McAllister to Liverpool, but they had a lot of injuries with Adingra, who is a really great talent, Mitoma. You had
Evan Ferguson, too, had
Evan
injuries.
Evan Ferguson, yep. Solly March wasn't always available. I mean, these guys, I think we talked about it in nauseam, got hit with quite the plague, last season. But, Sean, what can you tell us about the American coach?
Yep, Fabian Hertzler. We talked about him, I believe, in our very last episode. He comes over from FC St. Pauli in the Bundesliga 2, helped to get them promoted. I think he's kind of what we expect from Brighton managers. He's going to be patient and build up, emphasize keeping possession. They had the second most passes per sequence in the Premier League in terms of possession in the Bundesliga 2. His FC St. Pauli side had the most. So I expect that to be the case, and they'll be very reliant on the creativity of their wingers and your boy Purvis Estupiñán from left back. The one guy I just wanted to talk about really quickly was Yankuba Minta, who Kyle mentioned. He moved over from Newcastle, but last season he was out on loan at Feyenoord under Arne Slot, and also obviously with his teammate Mats Wijfer. So this kid is extremely exciting, dynamic, explosive. I compared him a little bit to shades of Sadio Mane. If you watch his highlights, you'll see it. It's palpable. He can play on the left or right. He's got a really strong left foot to cut in. And I think, you know, with him, Mitoma, and Adingra, they have really solid depth, as you talked about, James. They have a big squad. They probably will cut down a little bit as we get closer to the end of the window. But I expect him to really be someone who bursts onto the scene and make stuff happen right away. Wijfer is kind of a direct replacement for that Pascal Gross role. I don't know if he has the ability going forward that Gross has, but I do know that he is very strong in the air. As someone who's watched way too much Feyenoord highlights because our manager come from there, like I've seen both of them play a little bit, and I think both will be impact players in the Premier League right off the bat.
Yeah. I will put Brighton out for, you know, a tough season with the loss of Pascal Gross only for 7 mil to Borussia Dortmund, to I believe where he originally came from. But I mean, Kyle mentioned before he was the leading contributor goals and assists, only behind Bruno Fernandes with chances created was Pascal Gross. Wow. So the wingers that you're mentioning are going to need to provide a lot of momentum to replace someone who had such vision from further back on the pitch. So a lot of pressure on his replacement. But hopefully Brighton will be another fun team to watch with a lot of young talent. Kind of fitting, the fact that they're also listed as next on the list is Chelsea. Obviously, this came without knowing it or needing to look it up, but they have the youngest team in the league because they have literally done nothing but hire and sign 14 to 2-year-old children on their roster now. They have 41 players, and I think it might be up to 42 now with Neto. We'll talk about him. Obviously, a massive signing for the London, the West London crew. But back at the Stamford Bridge under new management, big shocker there. Enzo Maresca, first year in charge, was at Leicester City last season. So we'll see what he's able to do after bringing Leicester City up to promotion. I still think he's trying to figure out who the hell he's actually going to have on his roster. So I wouldn't hold any breaths or worry too much in the beginning. It's going to be a lot. I'm trying to figure out who that, you know, starting 11 is at this point. It's probably finding out who the 16 people are, because there is going to be a rotation with a very deep squad. So they're probably looking at top 16 players, you know, having a couple forwards going back and forth, having some wingers come in, maybe a different central midfielder, depending on who they're playing against. The back line shouldn't change. They obviously are going to change over last season. Personally, with the loss of Thiago Silva as one of the best central defenders in the sport, I think is losing a lot of experience for a lot of young players. At least if they kept him for another year to coach and to train, it would have been a good move. But obviously he's pushing 50 years old, so he can't stick around for too much longer. Chelsea was an oddball, right? Last season, I predicted them finishing in sixth place, and I believe that's where they finished. But one of the craziest ways to finish in sixth place, underneath Pochettino, they actually had the third best finishing form in the entire league. And it looked like you guys were kind of going on the up and up, but obviously Chelsea doesn't like to keep the same manager for more than 6 months. So Pochettino staying for the full season was too much to begin with. Cole Palmer, as we have all come to know and semi love the West London player. He had 22 goals and 11 assists.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he was a tremendous player for them, their top goal scorer and assister, as you mentioned. I think the two things when you look overall, when you stand out and look at their performance last year, the clean sheets, they only had 8, which was in the bottom half of the league. And then their post shot XG plus or minus, like I said, that's a goalie stat. They were minus 7.5, 15th in the league. That's an issue. They really just did not get good goaltending, whether it was Robert Sanchez, who they brought from Brighton, whether it was Petrovic, I think mm-hmm. it is the other guy. It wasn't good enough. They made another signing of a goalie, Mike Penders from Genk. They signed him for $20 million, but he's already been loaned back out for this season.
You got another one.
I don't know what they're doing there.
They got another one, Felipe Jorgensen from Villarreal, and I think they brought him to be their number one. They have six goalies on their squad right now. Six.
Yeah, which is insane. I think, yeah, probably Jorgensen will be the favorite. So Enzo Maresca, he's big on playing possession football. Think Man City light. That's what they're going to try to be this year. They'll build, the team around Palmer, of course, but there'll be a couple of new signings joining him as well. Pedro Neto, who we talked about quite a bit last year when he was at Wolves for $60 million, tremendous player on his day. My problem with him is injuries, because you look at him, he is undoubtedly a major upgrade in talent over Mykhailo Mudryk and what Raheem Sterling is currently. Obviously, overall, Sterling's been a tremendous Premier League player, but he's not quite at the levels he used to be at. But Neto has only started in 38 games in his last 4 seasons. Yeah. That's just insane. That's one season worth of games. William Saliba played more minutes last year than Neto has played in his last 5 combined. That's outrageous. So great player, but the availability is a concern. And then that kind of brings me to my next point, which is Tosin Adebayo. They brought him in from Fulham. Huge, imposing physical presence at 6'6". Yeah. He's in the 88th percentile for aerial duels won. But again, he's missed 10-plus games in the last 2 seasons due to injury. So did they upgrade their squad? Absolutely. But the availability is definitely a question mark. We saw that with Christopher Nkunku, who was one of their biggest signings last year, and we didn't see much of him because of injury. The last guy I wanted to talk about was Kiernan Dewsbury-Hall. He was the player of the year in the EFL Championship for Leicester. They bring him over for 35.5 mil, alleviates Leicester's concerns with profit and sustainability rules. Basically he's responsible for replacing Conor Gallagher, who's departed for Atletico Madrid.
Yep. Yep. I think that was a great sale to Atletico Madrid. If you don't follow Liga, Atleti is going to be a menace to play against now too. They just brought in Julian Alvarez from Man City. Right. So that's another one we'll talk about later on the podcast of the loss. But Chelsea is really kind of trying to do what they can, building a young squad, multiple years in the contracts, 5 to 6 is typical, some with 8, that they're really just trying to develop. So they're trying to find the secret recipe. And to be honest with you, maybe they should start looking at back of house staff for maybe more medical support. But other than that, it's going to be a very difficult team to predict. We do have the potential breakout player as Christopher Nkunku, who you mentioned already. He's essentially a new signing for Chelsea because of the lack of play that he was, able to participate in. I think they'll finish right around where they did this year, and they're going to be fighting for a position in Europa, in my opinion. Other than that, I think Chelsea will be a fun, entertaining team to watch on and off the pitch, just with what potential drama they'll have, trying to figure out who's going to be playing in the squad, especially with the expenses that they've spent over $1 billion over the past couple of seasons with Ted Bowley as head of the helm. So it'll be very interesting. One last person to mention that came in just because he's American is the Caleb Wiley. Did you mention him already, Sean? Did I miss that?
But, no, I did not. Yep. Yeah.
He's coming in as left back. So it'll be interesting. Yep. He's obviously young. He's from Atlanta United. He came in for a transfer fee of $10.1 million. So I can't really say too much about him, haven't watched a lot of the MLS, but what we can say is essentially every position on the Chelsea floor is up for grabs. So you could show off pretty early on this preseason, which they've had an up and down preseason as well. But we'll see how Chelsea does.
Dude, they brought in an entire team.
They brought in two teams,
that's,
my
that's
man.
10 it's guys, crazy. And the only recurring position other than center back is goalie. I mean, you could literally throw out a lineup that could compete against the likes of the bottom half of the table. That's insane. Yep.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, they were big chances missed. We might not even hear of Nicholas Jackson, his name, ever again in Chelsea, just how many people they have. Yeah. So, but we'll see. Chelsea will be very interested. I'll be interested to see Christian pop on the podcast earlier and during the season review so we can see a Chelsea input. But a team that had a little bit of outgoings this season as well, with similar to Bournemouth, I think their best player is Crystal Palace. I know the Silky Smooth Ballers is one of our favorites, but Sean, it is your favorite. You're back on the bandwagon for him. Why don't you give us the Crystal Palace preview?
And he's back as the head of the fan club as of the end of last season.
Yeah, as a still my guy, obviously. But as you mentioned, Crystal Palace gets a whole lot less silky with the departure of Michael Olise to Bayern Munich. Tremendous signing for Bayern. I think he's going to really take a step playing with players of his caliber. He was tremendous in the Olympics, which we haven't really touched on, but Spain did pull it out over France. I think Juan would be upset with us if we didn't mention that, so we have to. But Olise was the best player in the Olympics by a country mile. You look at Crystal Palace, his departure hurts, but overall, Oliver Glasner coming into his first full season, he took over in February of last year, and in that time frame, Palace had the fourth most points till the end of the season behind City, Arsenal, and Chelsea. So it's a really exciting team. Jean-Philippe Mateta is probably the guy going forward now. He had 16 goals for them, which was by far their top goal scorer. They had Jordan Ayew with 7 assists, and then Mateta was most goal contributions as well with 21. It's a team that, again, just like we talked about with Chelsea, they're actually even worse off. They were 16th in post-shot XG plus or minus last year with minus 8.5. So the goaltending is definitely an issue, and they haven't addressed it so far. To replace the outgoing Olise, they have brought in Ismaël Assar from Marseille. He was previously at Watford, if that's a name that maybe rings a bell for a few people. He was at Watford for, I think, 3 seasons. Dynamic, pacey, but he just doesn't necessarily have the end product that Olise would bring. He had 3 goals and 4 assists last year in Ligue 1. They also bring in Shandy Riad from Real Betis for $15 million. He's basically insurance in case Mark Gahey goes to Newcastle, which is a heavily rumored move. And then their final signing so far was the free transfer of Daichi Kamada, who moved over from Lazio. He has experience playing under Glasner at Eintracht Frankfurt. He could play either in that 10 role or also deeper as an 8. Very, very solid professional. I think he'll be a positive addition to them. But it's hard to see them not, you know, taking a step back. If they were able to keep Olise, I think this is a team that could have pushed for European Conference League. I think they have that ability. But without him, it's tough to see them really, you know, taking points off the big squads consistently. I think they should just be kind of going for their normal year, somewhere between 10th and 12th, I think would be a good season for them. Early season fixture-wise, they play Chelsea at Stamford Bridge and match week 3. And the potential breakout player for me is Matheus Franca, someone they signed from Brazil last summer. We didn't see a ton of him, but with the departure of Olise and then obviously the injury histories of Eze and Ismaël Assar, I think we'll see more of the 20-year-old. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time for a guy to come in and kind of establish himself in the Premier League. You know, there's a language barrier. There's also obviously, you know, a step up in class, physicality, and pace. So we'll see if he's up for the challenge, but I think he will be.
Yeah, and just moving right on to Everton. This is going to be an interesting season for Everton. We all know Goodison Park is one of the toughest stadiums to walk into and get a win. And this is still Sean Dyche on his 3rd season in charge. And last season, there was a lot of bullshit that went on with Everton. A lot of it, whether it's point deductions, reapplication to get it adjusted. Now they're only taking 7, not 9. Now they're back in the relegation zone. Now they're not. There was a lot of drama with Everton last season. I think if they can hold true to themselves this season and avoid the BS, you can see these guys very comfortably placing anywhere from, I would say anywhere from 7th to 13th. I think they're going to be a middle of the table team this season. I wouldn't dare to say they're going to get any European football out of this, but I also don't think they're in any position where they are worried about being relegated. I think this is going to be a big season for building young players, having a smart transfer market. They did go ahead and bring in three new players. We have Jake O'Brien, we have Tim Irogbunam. Sean, help me out here a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's close enough. I don't know exactly how to say it. Irogbunam was how I was saying it, but
Irogbunam?
That was just me taking the strategy of if you say it really fast, it doesn't sound as incorrect.
I like that. All right, and then the last guy is Illimin Ndai. All three of these guys are in their early 20s. This is something you like to see. They did get rid of three players as well, Lewis Dobbin, Ben Godfrey, and Amadou Onana. Those three were also on the younger side, so it's pretty much a swap of ages. But at the end of the day, they made £35 million from this transfer market. And the guys they brought in are coming from good teams. They're coming from Lyon, Marseille, Aston Villa. It should be a fun one. And the guy to look out for is going to be Jake O'Brien. Blake is extremely happy about the signing. He's a 6'5" monster. And he's just another great center back with Braithwaite. This is going to be massive for them, I think. Let's think about expectations. I think their goal should be European soccer. It should be the Europa League. That should be every team's goal who's looking to stay mid-table, because you got to set the bar high. I don't think it'll happen. I think it's a crap shot, but we'll see what happens. Early season fixtures that are going to be a trouble is going to be Spurs and Aston Villa. Two teams that on the second half of the season I thought shown better than a lot of teams. So this is going to be a team coming off victories, but it's Everton. So whether they're going to be home, whether they're going to be away is going to be the big, big difference here. As we all know, Sean,
yep.
Big rival, Liverpool. You want to take that one?
Yeah. Well, they don't like us. There's no doubt about that. They actively dislike Liverpool, but I wanted to talk about Tim Orogbunam, a guy you just mentioned. He moved over from Aston Villa And I think he's going to be responsible for holding down that role in deep lying midfield, taking over for Onana and playing alongside James Garner. So there's big shoes to fill from an athleticism, physicality standpoint, even though our boy Blake is happy to see the back of Onana. I think he is definitely a physical presence that they will miss. Just overall about Everton, they are dangerous on set pieces, and Jake O'Brien will definitely contribute to that as well. Last year, they had the highest XG on set plays in the league and the second most goals in the league on set plays behind Arsenal. They had 19, Arsenal had 20. I would expect that to be the case going forward. It's one of the things that Sean Dyche prides himself on, is his ability to scheme up plays to get his big boys involved on corners, free kicks, etc. All right, and moving from Everton to a team that finished in and around them in the table, just a few spots higher, we have Fulham, the Cottagers, entering Marco Silva's fourth season at the helm. Last year was a pretty solid season for them. They were able to stay up comfortably, which is definitely not something that we thought was going to be the case after the departure of Alexander Mitrovic. They finished 13th, pretty solid. Goal differential of -6. I think the delta over last year, though, from an XG standpoint, is a little bit concerning to me. They created 50.8 XGs, but they conceded 63. They actually scored 55 and conceded 61 in actuality. So they overachieved on both standpoints. That's something that I don't think they can count on going forward. They had the fewest big chances missed. But a big reason for that is that they had the 17th most created, which basically indicates they weren't scoring or creating a whole lot of chances. They like positional rotation from their front five, and that's kind of plays out in their stats. They had Rodrigo Muniz lead the way with 9 goals, but they had several guys over 5 but below 9. Andreas Pereira led them in assists with 7. Harry Wilson had the most goal contributions with 10. So they're one of the only teams where it's very much scoring by committee. But a big piece of that committee has left with João Polinha's departure to Bayern Munich, another team in London getting their best player poached by the Bavarians. I think he's a huge loss. He's always one of the best players from the standpoint of breaking up play, interceptions, blocks, tackles, all that. He flies around, and they really haven't been able to replace him yet this summer. Their biggest signing was someone that James touched on before, Emile Smith-Rowe. He'll play probably in that number 10 role, potentially off the left as well. He has that versatility. They also brought in Jorge Cuenca from Villarreal. And then the last signing is a former face, or excuse me, a familiar face, a youth academy product of Fulham, Ryan Sessegnon, who moves back from Tottenham after a very, very disappointing spell for him. Just really couldn't get off the ground due to injuries, but I think he's a player that there's still a lot there. He can play on the at left back. He can play wing back if you want to play a back three or back five, and even play a little bit on the wings. I don't know if he has the, you know, the end product to play at the Prem level, but he was productive there when he played in the Championship.
You're right, Sean. I think having Emile Smith-Rowe will be a big help. A lot of transfer activity for them, but in terms of quality, I think they're losing a little bit here. You've kind of said it all along with Polinha leaving. He did lead the leagues with tackles last season. I think he was their best player. And to be honest with you, like you said before, their big chances created of 68 to the big chances missed of 35. They need to be able to provide more attacking power, especially if they're most likely going to be conceding more goals with the lacking of the Polinha in the center of the pitch. And going back to their top goal scorer of Rodrigo Muniz, who had 9, I think he had maybe 6 of those 9 goals within 2-3 games. So it's not like they're getting consistent up top play regardless. So I think you talk about Emile Smith-Rowe coming in as a center attacking mid left winger. He's going to play a very important part in being a creative player. When he played alongside Martin Ødegaard, he was able to create a lot. When he played with Saka, he was able to create a lot, score a lot. He's a player that you could see double-digit goals and assists from, provided that he stays healthy, which was my biggest issue with Smith-Rowe when he was on the Gunners, was obviously health. Similar to a lot of the players on Chelsea, the best player is an available player, so you have to be able to perform on the pitch to actually be rated. Other than that, I know that we already talked about Tosin going to Chelsea, the 6'6" monster. So that's going to be another issue. You're losing a very large, you know, partner in the back. Obviously, he wasn't able to play a lot, as we mentioned before, due to, again, injuries. But you're losing your defensive ability. You lost your main striker last season, never truly got him back. So to me, I think Fulham is in jeopardy of potentially going down this season, which could be great, because Arsenal, I believe, has a sell-on clause for Emile Smith-Rowe. So if he goes down, we'll just keep the cash flow coming from him. Who knows? Maybe we'll buy him back. I think they're going to have a very tough beginning of the season, but their big one is obviously match week number 1 with Manchester United being away. So we'll see how they go. But other than that, I think we can go to a team that on the other end of being relegated came up this season. It is actually our first team we're talking about, one of the three that was newly promoted. We've mentioned Leicester City briefly, the other one obviously being Southampton that Kyle mentioned. But right now we're going to talk about Ipswich. So Kyle, why don't you take us away to Ipswich? Obviously a new name to the Premier League, I think, ever, correct? The Tractor Boys, never been in the Premier League before. So it's great to see a team enter and absolutely be able to watch their debut.
Yeah, I'm super excited for Ipswich. I think they have a very, very good chance of staying in the Premier League this year. And I think a lot of that comes from their coach, Kieran McKenna. He's an ex-player. He was the captain of Northern Ireland's U19 team back in his day, and he's been around football his entire life. He's a young coach. He's 38 years old, and he's been in the Prem not so much as a player. He used to coach the actual youth academy for Spurs, Leicester, Nottingham, and then even some in the MLS. He was the Vancouver Whitecaps youth coach while he was studying. So he got the chance to head over to the Prem on scholarship as around a 20-year-old. And he studied sports science, realized that his 5'9" ass ain't making it in the Premier League. So he switched over to coaching. And he's been a coach throughout the game his entire life. And I'm pumped for this. I love a young coach in the Premier League with a new team. and these guys are going to be a new team. We have a lot of new transfers coming in from teams such as Chelsea, Man City, West Ham, Burnley. They're only letting go of one player for a whopping £1.18 million, which James will tell you is, it shows, you know, the depth of players that come into the Premier League for teams that have never been there. It's, yeah, you got to bolster the team. You got to make money, and you got to spend money to make money. So that's exactly what they're doing. I think the biggest name for everyone to look out for is going to be Leif Davis. Dude had 18 assists as a left back last season. 18. I mean, we're talking a potential another Trent Alexander-Arnold almost in the Prem. I'm so pumped to see something like this. So I think big things are coming from the team. I would be hard-pressed to see them struggle against the bottom half of the table. Granted, I mean, team never been in the Prem. Let's get one thing straight. It's another beast. It's the hardest league in the world. Yeah. You're going to be playing some teams that you're going to think they're made of different material than you are. They're not humans, but they are. So it's exciting. Very exciting. I think big things out of this team. That's all I can say. James, you got anything else to add?
Yeah, another thing that Leif Davis and Trent Alexander-Arnold share is their weekly salary. Leif Davis has a whopping £9,423 per week salary, obviously very similar to the great Trent Alexander-Arnold. So I think that puts a lot of things in perspective when we talk about these new teams coming in to Premier League is their funding, right? Obviously, Kyle, you mentioned that they had a lot of good players coming in. Right now, their annual salary is £7,878. Their active roster. That is less than, I would put a percentage of
what? I would say at least definitely the top six. Like if you're a starter in the top six, you probably make closer to $10 million a year, $8 million a year. So yeah, it's remarkable. I think we talked about it last year quite a bit about how like Sheffield United didn't invest enough money to stay up. I think they gave themselves a chance. They spent $73 million almost. They bring in Omari Hutchinson, who was one of their best players, on loan last year from Chelsea. They finalized that deal. They bring Jacob Greaves in from Hull City, a team that played really strong, played out from the back. So he has ability on the ball. We know that. Liam Delap, who was also on loan at Hull City last year, he's a Manchester City youth product. I think we've seen, you know, the fruits of their labor. Cole Palmer obviously being the most sparkling example, but there's been good players that City's been producing for a few years. Ben Johnson, who's a solid, versatile defensive player from West Ham, and then Muric from Burnley to play goalkeeper. I think they've given themselves a chance. It's just whether or not they're going to be able to overcome the laugh experience. Yeah, it's like, do they have the experience?
Yeah, just for reference, as James mentioned, they, you know, annual salary of about £7 million. For a top-tier team that spends money, and Man City does spend money. We might not spend the most in the Premier League, but we spend more than we should. We're going to be, you know, exposed this season probably for all of our breaches.
Come November.
But they spend $4.2 million on their weekly payroll at Man City. The average player makes over £7 million per year. Yep. So, like, we're talking 2 weeks at Man City is a season at Ipswich.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an uphill battle, straight up, but that's what you do when you get into the Premier League.
It's going to be a great season, I think, for all. I think it's going to be very entertaining, as always. It'll be exciting to see who's actually going to start forming. Obviously, you can't do too much judging of the future of the season within the first couple of weeks. No one can predict anything through the end until right around the Christmas break, Boxing Day kind of week anyway. So we'll be able to kind of review and go from there. But obviously with 20 teams, three new ones, there's a lot to go over during our preseason preview. The games do start this weekend, but we'll come out with the second half of the preseason review, starting with Leicester City, the second team to earn, or the first team to earn promotion last season, I believe, finishing in first place. So we'll pick up with them next week, but this was just the start of something beautiful, as always, with you gents. So Sean and Kyle, we will be in touch again shortly. The EPL State of Mind listeners, we always appreciate you guys sticking through these lengthier ones, especially when we go over the teams and details. I know they're not all your favorite teams, but they are all in your favorite league and in your favorite podcast show.
That was beautiful, James.
Hey, wow. Listen. They, you know, a Hallmark actually on this offseason requested me to sign a consulting contract, but I turned them down for you too because they're not as good looking. But any final sign off, guys, before we go on this? Sean, anything to say?
Yeah, just quickly, I'm really excited to be back. Any feedback that anybody has that we, you know, will take and use for the next episode, please pass it along. But excited to be back with you boys and excited for the season to kick off on Friday.
Yeah. Kyle, man. Well, real quick, the feedback we're expecting is not baby names. Sean has made it very clear that Jamie and Kylie, in honor of James and Kyle, are top two of the baby names.
I've heard that.
Not taking any more write-ins.
Who's first? Who's the middle name? It's hard to pick.
Kyle, how about you, my man? You
want to I'm just looking forward. You know, this is going to be a phenomenal season. The biggest thing to take away from this week was that, I mean, Man City successfully completed over 500 passes in their Community Shield victory over Manchester United. That's a feat that not any other team can say this week. You know, we completed 500 passes. Incredible. We got some silverware. Big things. But I'm more than excited. This is going to be a hell of a season. And fortunately for the podcast, it looks like the three of our teams will be finishing in the top, you know, bracket in this tournament. That is the Premier League. So let's get it rolling. Let's see who takes gold, who takes silver, and who gets bronze.
Now I see what you did there. Very good. All right. Well, everybody, again, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.